Suffer Not, The Unclean to Live, by Gareth Thorpe. Yakov caught himself dozing as his chin bowed to his chest, lulled by the soporific effect of the warm sun and the steady clatter of hooves on the cobbled street. Blinking himself awake, he gazed from the open carriage at the buildings going past him. Colonnaded fronts and tiers of balconies stretched above him for several stories, separated by wide, tree-lined streets. Thick-veined, marble fascias swept past, followed by dark granite facades, whose polished surfaces reflected the mid-afternoon light back at him. Another kilometre, and the first signs of decay began to show. Crumbling mosaics scattered their stones across the narrowing pavements. Creeping plants twined around balustrades and cornices. Empty windows, some no longer glazed, stared back at him. With a yell to their horses, the carriage driver brought them to a stop and sat there, waiting for the preacher to climb down to the worn cobbles.
"This is as far as I'm allowed,"
the driver said, without turning around, sounding half apologetic and half thankful. Yakov walked around to the driver's seat and fished into the pocket of his robe for coins, but the coachman avoided his gaze and set off once more, turning the carriage down a side street and out of sight. Yakov knew better. No honest man on Charis Cephalon would take payment from a member of the clergy, but he still hadn't broken the habit of paying for services and goods. He had tried to insist once on tipping a travel rail porter, and the man had nearly broken down in tears, his eyes fearful. Yakov had been here for 4 years now, and yet still he was adjusting to the local customs and beliefs. Hoisting his embroidered canvas pack further onto his shoulder, Yakov continued his journey on foot. His long legs carried him briskly past the ruins of counting houses and ancient stores, apartments that had once belonged to the fabulously wealthy and the old royal treasury, abandoned now for over 7 centuries. He had already walked for a kilometre when he topped the gradual rise and looked down upon his parish. Squat, ugly shacks nestled in the roads and alleyways between once mighty edifices of the royal quarter. He could smell the effluence of the near homeless, the stench of unwashed bodies and the strangely exotic melange of cooking which swept to him on the smoke of thousands of fires. The sun was beginning to set as he made his way down the long hill, and soon the main boulevard was dropped into cool shadow, chilling after the earlier warmth. Huts made from corrugated metal, rough planks, sheets of plastine, and other detritus butted up against the cut stones of the old city blocks. The babble of voices could now be heard, the screeching of children and the yapping and barking of dogs adding to the muted racket. The clatter of pans as meals were readied vied with the cries of babes and the clucking of hens. Few of the inhabitants were in sight. Most of them were indoors, getting ready to eat, the rest still working out in the fields or down the mines in the far hills. A small girl, perhaps 12 Terran years old, came running out from behind a flapping sheet of coarsely woven hemp. Her laughter was high-pitched, almost a squeal, as a boy, slightly younger perhaps, chased her down and bundled her to the ground. They both seemed to notice Yakov at the same time and instantly quelled their high spirits. Dusting themselves down, they stood up and waited, respectfully, heads slightly bowed.
"Katerina, isn't it?"
Yakov asked as he stopped in front of the girl.
"Yes, preacher,"
she replied meekly, looking up at him with her one good eye. The other was nothing more than a scabbed red mass which seemed to spill from the socket and across her face, enveloping her left ear and leaving one half of her scalp bald. She smiled prettily at him, and he smiled back.
"Shouldn't you be helping your mother with the cooking?" he suggested, glancing back towards the ramshackle hovel that served as their home.
"Mam's at church."
The girl's younger brother, Pyotr butted in, earning himself a kick on the shin from his sibling.
She said we was to wait here for her.
Yakov looked at the boy. His shriveled right arm and leg gave his otherwise perfect human body a lopsided look. It was the children that always affected him the most. Ever cheerful, despite the bleakness of their future, the ghastliness of their surroundings. If all the Emperor's faithful had the same indomitable spirit, he and mankind would have overcome all evil and adversity millennia ago. Their crippled, mutated bodies may be vile, he thought to himself, but their souls were as human as any.
Too early for church, isn't it?
He asked them both, wondering why anyone would be there at least 2 hours before Mass was due to begin.
She says she wants to speak to you with some other people, Preacher Yakov.
Catania told him, clasping her hands behind her back as she looked up at the tall clergyman.
Well, get back inside and make sure everything's tidy for when your mother returns, you two,
he told them gently, hoping the sudden worry he felt hadn't shown. As he hurried on his way, he tried to think what might be happening. He had heard disturbing rumours that in a few of the other shanties, a debilitating plague had begun to spread amongst the mutant population. In those unhygienic close confines, such diseases spread rapidly, and as slaves from all over the world congregated in the work teams could leap from ghetto to ghetto with devastating rapidity. Taking a right turn, Yakov made his way towards the chapel that was also his home, raised 5 years ago by the mutants themselves. It was as ramshackle as the rest of the ghetto. The building leaked and was freezing in the winter, baking hot in the summer. Yet the effort put into its construction was admirable, even if the result was deplorable, if not a little insulting. Yakov suspected that Karis Kephalon's cardinal, prelate Kadaska, had felt a perverse sense of satisfaction when he had heard who would be sent to tend the mutant parish. Coming from the Armormans, Yakov strongly believed that the edifices raised to the Emperor should be highly ornamented, splendid and glittering works of art in praise of the Holy Father of mankind. To be given charge of something he would previously have declared unfit for a privy was most demeaning. And even after all this time, the thought still rankled. Of course, Kadaska, like all the native clergy of Karis Kephalon and the surrounding systems, was of the lucid tendency, preferring poverty and abstinence to ostentation and excessive decoration. It had been a sore point between the two of them during more than one theological discussion, and Yakov's obstinate refusal to accept the prevailing beliefs of his new world did his future prospects within the ecclesiarchy no favours. Then again, he mused ruefully to himself, his chances of any kind of elevation within the hierarchy had all but died when he had been assigned the shanty as a parish. As he walked, he saw the rough steeples of the chapel rising over the squat, muty dwellings. Its battered, twisted roofs were slicked with greying mould, despite the aggressive efforts of the volunteer work teams who maintained the shrine. As he picked his way through a labyrinth of drying lines and filth-strewn gutters, Yakov saw a large crowd gathered outside the chapel, as he expected he would. Nearly 500 of his parishioners, each mutated to a greater or lesser degree, were stood waiting, an angry buzz emanating from the throng. As he approached, they noticed him and started flocking in his direction, and he held up his hands to halt them before they swept around him. Pious they might be, but kind on the nose they were not. They all started babbling at once, in everything from high-pitched squeaks down to guttural bass tones, and once more he raised his hands, silencing them.
"You speak, Glorian,"
he said, pointing towards the large mining overseer whose muscled bulk was covered in a constantly flaking red skin and open sores.
"The plague preacher has come here,"
Glorian told him, his voice as cracked as his flesh.
"Father Marok died of it this morning, and a dozen others are falling ill already."
Yakov groaned inwardly, but kept his craggy, hawk-like face free of expression. So, his suspicions were correct. The deadly scourge had arrived in the parish.
"And you are all here because?"
he asked, casting his dark gaze over the misshapen crowd.
"Come here to ask the Emperor in prayers," replied Glorian,
his large eyes looking expectantly at Yakov.
"I will compose a suitable mass for this evening. Return to your homes and eat. Starving will not aid you against this plague,"
he said firmly. Some of the assembly moved away, but most remained.
"Go!"
he snapped, Yakov waving them away with a thin hand, irritated at their reticence.
"I cannot recall suitable prayers with you taking up all my attention, can I?"
After a few more murmurs, the crowd began to dissipate, and Yakov turned and strode up the rough plank stairs to the chapel entrance, taking the shallow steps two at a time. He pulled aside the sagging, rough-spun curtain that served as a barrier to the outside world and stepped inside. The interior of the chapel was as dismal as the outside, with only a few narrow gaps in the planking and crudely bent sheets of metal of the walls to let in light. Motes of dust drifted from the rough-cut ceiling, dancing lightly in the narrow shafts of the ruddy sunlight. Without thought, he turned and took a candle from the stand next to the entrance, picking up a match from the next to the pile of tallow lights, one of the few indulgences extracted from the miserly Kadaska. He struck it on the emery stone and lit the candle. Rather than truly illuminating the chapel, the flickering light created a circle of puny light around the preacher, emphasizing the gloom beyond its wavering light. As he walked towards the altar at the far end, an upturned crate covered with an altar spread and a few accoutrements he had brought with him. The candle flame flickered in the draughts wheezing through the ill-built walls, making his shadow dance behind him. Carefully placing the candle in its holder to the left of the altar, he knelt, his bony knees protesting the solidity of the cracked roadway that made up the shrine's floor. Cursing Kadaska once more, he had taken away Yakov's prayer cushion, saying it was a sign of decadence and weakness. Yakov tried to clear his turbulent thoughts, attempting to find that place of calm that allowed him to bring forth his litanies to the Emperor. He was about to close his eyes when he noticed something on the floor in front of the altar. Looking closer, the preacher saw that it was a dead rat. Yakov sighed. It was not the first time. Despite his oratories against it, some of his parishioners still insisted on their old barbaric ways, making such offerings to the Emperor in supplication or penance. Pushing these thoughts aside, Yakov closed his eyes, trying to settle himself. As he stood by the entrance to the shrine, nodding reassuringly to his congregation as they filed out, Yakov felt a hand on his arm, and he turned to see a girl. She was young, no older than 16 standard years by her looks, and her pale face was pretty, framed by dark hair. Taking her hand off his robe, she smiled, and it was then Yakov looked into her eyes. Even in the gloom of the chapel, they looked dark, and after a moment he realized they were actually jet black. Not a trace of iris or white could be seen. She blinked rapidly, meeting his gaze.
"Yes, my child?" Yakov asked softly,
bowing slightly so that he could hear her words without her needing to raise her voice.
"Thank you for your prayers, Yakov,"
she replied, and her smile faded.
"But it would take more than prayers to heal your faithful."
"As the Emperor sees fit,"
the preacher murmured in reply, keeping his gaze steady.
"You must ask for medical supplies from the governor,"
she said calmly, not asking him but stating it as a fact.
"And who are you to tell me what I must and must not do, young lady?"
Yakov responded smoothly, keeping the irritation from his voice.
"I am Lethesia,"
was her short reply, causing Yakov's heart to flutter slightly. The girl was a wanted terrorist. The governor's special security agents had been hunting her for months, following attacks on slave pens and the homes of the wealthy landowners. She had already been sentenced to death in absentia, in a trial 7 weeks ago, and here she was, talking to him.
"Are you threatening me?"
he asked, trying to keep his voice level, even though a knot of fear had begun to tighten in his stomach. Her blinking rapidly increased for a moment before she gave a short, childish laugh.
"Oh, no!"
she squealed, stifling another giggle by covering her mouth with a delicate hand, which, Yakov noticed, had rough skin peeling on each slender knuckle. Taking control of herself, her face became serious.
"You know what you must do for your parish? Your congregation has already started dying, and only treatment can help them. Go to the prelate, go to the governor, ask them for medicine."
"I can tell you what their answer will be," Yakov said heavily, gesturing for her to follow him as he pulled the heavy curtains shut and started up the aisle.
"And what is that?"
Lathasia asked, falling into step beside him, walking with quick strides to keep up with his long-legged gait.
"Medicine is in short supply. Slaves are not,"
he replied, matter-of-factly, stopping and facing her. There was no point trying to make it easier. Every one of Karis Kephalon's ruling class could afford to lose 1,000 slaves, but medical supplies, brought at great expense from off-world, could cost them half a year's profits. Lathasia understood this, but had obviously railed against the fate the Emperor had laid down for her.
"You do realize you have put me in a very awkward position, don't you, child?" he added bitterly.
"Why so?" she answered back. "Because a preacher should not be conversing with a wanted criminal."
"No, that is easy to deal with," Yakov replied after a moment's thought. "Tomorrow, when I see the prelate, I will inform him that I saw you, and he will tell the governor, who will in turn send the SSA to interrogate me. And I will tell them nearly everything."
"Nearly everything?"
she said with a raised eyebrow.
"Nearly,"
he replied with a slight smile.
"After all, if I say that it was you who entreated me to ask for medical supplies, there is even less chance that I will be given them."
"So you will do this for me?"
Lathasia asked, with a bright smile.
"No,"
Yakov replied, making her smile disappear as quickly as it came. He stooped to pick up a strip of rag littering the flagstones of the floor.
"But I will do it for my parishioners, as you say. I have no hope that the request will be granted, none at all. And my poor standing with the prelate will be worsened even more by the confrontation. But that is not to be helped. I must do as my duty dictates."
"I understand, and you have my thanks," Lathasia said, softly before walking away, disappearing through the curtained doorway without a backward glance.
Sighing, Yakov crumbled up the rag in his hand and moved to the altar to finish clearing up. The plexiglass window of the mono conveyor was stretched and scuffed, but beyond it, Yakov could see the capital, Karis, stretched out beneath him. Under the spring sun, the whitewashed buildings were stark against the fertile plains surrounding the city. Palaces, counting houses, SSA courthouses and governmental office towers reared from the streets towards him as the conveyor rumbled noisily over its single rail. He could see other conveyor carriages on different tracks, gliding like smoke-belching beetles over the city, their plexiglass-sided cabs reflecting the sun in brief dazzles as it moved in and out from the clouds overhead. Turning his gaze ahead, he looked at the Amethyst Palace, seat of the governor and cathedral of Karis Kephalon. Its high walls surrounded the hilltop on which it was built, studded with towers from which fluttered massive pennants showing the symbols of the Revolutionary Council. Once each tower would have hung the standard of one of the old aristocratic families, but they had been burnt, along with those families, in the bloody coup that had overturned their rule 730 years ago. The keep, punctured at its centre by the mysterious kilometre-high black needle of Senamis, rose above the walls, a conglomeration of millennia of additional wings, buttresses and towers, obscuring its original architecture like successive layers of patina. Under his feet, the conveyor's gears began to grind and whir more loudly as the carriage pulled into the palace docking station. Yakov navigated his way through the terminus without thought, his mind directed towards the coming meeting with Prelate Kadaska. He barely acknowledged the salutes of the guards at the entrance to the Cardinal's chambers, only subconsciously registering that they carried heavy-looking auto-rifles in addition to their ceremonial spears.
"Ah, Constantine,"
Kadaska murmured, as the door swung closed behind the preacher, looking up at Yakov from behind his high desk. A single laser quill, an auto-tablet, adorned its dull black surface, reflecting the sparsity of the rest of the chamber. The walls were plainly whitewashed, like most of the Amethyst Palace's interior, with a single imperial eagle stenciled in black on the wall behind the cardinal. He was a handsome man, in his middle ages, maturing with dignity and poise, dressed in a plain black cassock, his only badge of office the small steel circlet holding back his lustrous blonde hair. The cardinal was an elegant, if severe, figure. He wouldn't have looked out of place as a leading actor on the stage at the Revolutionary Theatre, with his active bright blue eyes, chiseled cheekbones and strong chin. He would have enthralled the ladies, had he not had another calling.
"Good of you to see me, Cardinal," replied Yakov.
At the gestured invitation from Kadaska, the preacher sat in one of the high-backed chairs that were arranged in a semicircle in front of the desk.
"I must admit to a small amount of surprise at receiving your missive this morning,"
Prelate Kadaska told him, leaning back in his own chair.
"You understand why I felt it necessary to talk to you,"
inquired Yakov, waiting for the customary verbal thrust and parry that accompanied all of his conversations with Kadaska.
"Your parish and the plague. Of course I understand," Kadaska nodded as he spoke.
He was about to continue when a knock at the door interrupted him. At Kadaska's call, they opened and a servant in the plain livery of an ecclesiarchal servant entered with a caref and glass on a small wooden tray.
"I suspect you are thirsty after journeying all this way,"
Kadaska indicated the drink with an open palm.
Yakov nodded his thanks, pouring himself a glass of the crisp water and sipping it carefully. The servant left the tray on the desk and retired wordlessly. "Where was I? Oh yes, the plague. It has struck many of the slave communities badly. Why have you waited until now before requesting aid?"
Kadaska's question was voiced lightly, but Yakov suspected he was, as always, being tested somehow. He considered his reply for a moment, sipping more water as an excuse for not answering.
"The other slaves are not my parishioners. They are not my concern," he said,
setting the empty glass back on the tray and raising his eyes to return the gaze of the cardinal.
"Ah, your parish, of course," agreed Kadaska with a smile. "Your duty to your parishioners. And why do you think I can entreat the governor and the committee to act now, when they have let so many others die already?"
"I am simply performing my duty, as you say," replied Yakov smoothly, keeping his expression neutral. "I have made no promises other than to raise this with yourself, and I do not expect any particular success on your part. As you say, there's been an abundance of time to act before now, but still, I must ask. Will you ask the governor and committee to send medical aid and staff to my parish to help defend the faithful against infection by this epidemic?"
"I will not," Kadaska answered curtly. "They have already made it clear to me that not only is the expense of such resources unjustified, but the lifting of the ban on full citizens entering slave areas may prove a difficult legal wrangle."
"My congregation is dying," barked Yakov,
though in his heart he felt less vehement.
"Can you not do something to help them?"
"I will offer up prayers for them,"
the cardinal responded, showing no sign of being perturbed by Yakov's outburst. Yakov caught himself before he said anything. This was one of Kadaska's traps. The cardinal was desperate to find some reason to discredit Yakov, to disband his unique parish and send him on his way.
"As I already have," Yakov said, eventually.
There was an uncomfortable silence for several seconds, both preacher and cardinal gazing at each other over the desk, weighing up the opposition. It was Kadaska who broke the quiet.
"It irks you to preach to these slaves?"
the cardinal asked suddenly.
Slaves are entitled to spiritual guidance, even by the laws of Charis Cephalon, the preacher replied.
That is not an answer, Cadaskia told him gravely.
I find the situation on this world difficult to align with the teachings of my faith, Yakov admitted finally.
You find slavery against your religion?
Of course not, Yakov snorted. It is these mutants, these creatures that I preach to. This world is built upon the exploitation of something unholy and abhorrent, and I believe it denigrates everyone involved in it.
Ah, your armament upbringing. The prelate's voice dipped with scorn.
So harsh and pure in intent, and yet so soft and decadent in execution. We are an accepted and recognized sect within the Ministerium, Yakov said defensively.
Accepted? Recognized, I agree, but accepted. That is another matter entirely, Cadaskia said bluntly. Your founder, Gracious of Armorm, was charged with heresy.
Man found innocent, countered Yakov. He couldn't stop himself from adding, after a fair trial in front of his peers.
Yes, agreed Cadaskia, slowly, his sly smile returning once more.
Yakov's audience with the Cardinal had lasted most of the afternoon, and once again the sun was beginning to set as he made his way back to the shantytown. As on the previous night, there were many of the mutants gathered around the shrine. Rumours of his visit to the Cardinal had spread, and he was met by a crowd of eager faces. One look at his own expression quelled their anticipation, and an angry murmur sprang up. It was Menavon who stepped forward, a troublemaker by nature, in Yakov's opinion. He looked down at Menavon's bestial features, and not for the first time, wondered if he had been sired by unholy union with a dog or a bear. Tufts of coarse hair sprung in patches all across his body, and his jaw was elongated and studded with tusk-like teeth stained yellow. Menavon looked back at him with small, beady eyes.
"He does nothing," the mutant stated. "We die, and they all do nothing."
"The Emperor's will be done," replied Yakov sternly, automatically echoed by some of the gathered mutants.
"The Emperor I trust and adore," Menavon declared hotly. "But the Governor I wouldn't spit on if he were burning."
"That is seditious talk, Menavon, and you would do well to curb your tongue," warned Yakov, stooping to talk quietly to the rabble-rouser.
"I say, we make him help us," shouted Menavon,
ignoring Yakov and turning towards the crowd.
"It's time we made ourselves heard."
There were discontented growls of agreement from the others. Some shouted out their approval.
"Too long have they lorded over us. Too long we've been ignored," continued Menavon. "Enough is enough. No more."
"No more," repeated the crowd with a guttural roar. "Silence," bellowed Yakov, holding his arms up to silence them.
The crowd fell quiet instantly at his commanding tone.
"This discord will serve for nothing. If the Governor will not listen to me, your preacher, he will not listen to you. Your masters will not tolerate this outburst lightly. Go back to your homes and pray. Look not to the Governor, but to yourselves and the master of us all, the Holy Emperor. Go now!"
Menavon shot the preacher a murderous look as the crowd heeded his words, dispersing with backward glances and muttered curses.
"Go back to your family, Menavon. You can do them no good dead on a scaffold," Yakov told him quietly.
The defiance in the mutant's eyes disappeared, and he nodded sadly. He cast a long, despairing glance at the preacher, and then he too turned away. The touch of something cold woke Yakov. And when he opened his eyes, his gaze fell first upon the glittering knife blade held in front of his face. Tearing his eyes away from the sharpened steel, he followed the arm to the knife's wielder, and his look was met by the whitened orbs of the mutant he knew to be called Byzanthus. Like Lethysia, he was a renegade and hunted by the special security agents. His face was solemn. His eyes intent upon the preacher. The ridged and wrinkled grey skin that covered his body was dull in the silvery light, which occasionally broke through the curtain swaying in the glassless window of the small chamber.
"I had your promise,"
Yakov heard Lethesia speak from the shadows. A moment later she stepped forwards, her hair catching the moonlight as she passed in front of the window.
Maya asked. They said no, replied Yakov,
pushing Byzanthus's arm away and sitting up, the thin blanket falling to his waist to reveal the taut muscle of his stomach and chest.
You keep in good shape, she commented,
noticing his lean physique.
A daily walk to the chapel keeps me fit, Yakov replied,
feeling no discomfort as a penetrating gaze swept over his body.
I must stay physically as well as spiritually fit to serve the Emperor's will.
The fuck is this?
A flickering yellow light drew the preacher's attention to the window and he rose from the thin mattress to pace over and look. Lethesia smiled at his nakedness, but he ignored her. Fleshly matters such as his own nudity were beneath him. Pulling aside the ragged curtain, Yakov saw the light came from dozens of blazing torches, and when he listened carefully, he could hear voices raised in argument. One of them sounded like Menavan's, and as his eyes adjusted, he could see the hairy mutant in the torchlight gesticulating towards the city.
Emperor, damn him! Cursed Yakov,
pushing past Lethesia to grab his robes from a chair behind her. Pulling on his vestments, he rounded on the mutant girl.
You put him up to this, he demanded.
Menavan has been an associate of mine for quite some time, she admitted,
not meeting his gaze.
Why? Yakov asked simply. The governor will not stand for this discontent.
Too long we have allowed this tyranny to continue, she said with feeling. Just as in the revolution, the slaves have tired of the lash. It is time to strike back.
The Revolutionary Council was backed by 2/3 of the old king's army, spat Yakov, fumbling in the darkness for his boots. You will all die. Menavan's brother is dead,
Byzanthus growled from behind Yakov.
Murdered.
Yakov rounded on the grey-skinned man.
You know this. For sure.
Unless he slit his own throat, yes, replied Lethesia. The masters did this, and no one will investigate because it is just one of the slaves who has died. Justice must be served.
The Emperor judges all in time, Yakov replied instinctively.
He pointed out of the window.
And he'll be judging some of them this evening if you let this foolishness continue. Damn your souls to chaos! Don't you care that they'll die?
Better to die fighting, Lethesia whispered back, than on our knees, begging for scraps and offal.
The preacher snarled wordlessly and hurried out through the chapel into the street. As he rounded the corner, he was met by the mutant mob, their faces twisted in anger, their raucous, raging cries springing to life as they saw him. Menavan was at their head, holding a burning brand high in the air. The embodiment of the revolutionary ringleader. Only he wasn't, thought Yakov bitterly. That honour belonged to the manipulative, headstrong teenage girl back in his room.
What in the Emperor's name do you think you are doing? Demanded Yakov,
his deep voice rising to a deafening shout over the din of the mob. They ignored him, and Menavan pushed him aside as the crowd swept along the street. The preacher recognised many faces in the torchlight as the mob passed by. Some of them children. He felt someone step up beside him, and he turned and saw Lethesia, watching the mutants marching past, her face triumphant.
How did one so young become so bloodthirsty? Muttered Yakov,
directing a venomous glare at her before setting off after the mutants. They were moving at some speed, and Yakov had to force his way through the crowd with long strides, pulling and elbowing aside mutants to get to the front. As he neared the edge of the ghetto, the crowd began to slow, and he broke through to the front of the mob, where he saw what had stalled their advance. Across the main thoroughfare stood a small detachment of the SSA, their grey and black uniforms dark against the glare of a troop transport searchlight behind them. Each cradled a shotgun in their hands, their visored helms reflecting the flames of the torches. Yakov stopped and let the mutants swirl around him, his mouth dry with fear. Next to him, the pretty young girl, Catania, was staring at the SS officers. She seemed to notice Yakov suddenly, and looked up at the preacher with a small, uncertain smile. He didn't smile back, but focuses his attention on the law enforcers ahead.
"Turn back now! You are in violation of the slave encampment laws!" screeched a voice over a loud hailer.
"No more!"
shouted Menavan, hurling his torch at the security agents, his cry voiced by others. Stones and torches rattled off the cobbles and walls of the street, and one of the officers went down to a thrown bottle that smashed across his darkened helmet.
"You were warned, mutant scum!"
snarled the SSA officer's voice over the hailer. At some unheard command, the agents raised their shotguns. Yakov hurled himself across Catania, just as gunfire exploded all around him. There were sudden screams and shouts. A hail of agony shrieked from his left as he and the girl rolled to the ground. He felt something pluck at his robes as another salvo roared out. The mutants were fleeing. Disorder reigned as they scrabbled and tore at one another to fight their way clear. Bare and booted feet stamped on Yakov's fingers as he held himself over Catania, who was mewling and sobbing beneath him. Biting back a yell of pain as a heel crushed his left thumb between two cobbles, Yakov forced himself upright. Within moments, he and the girl were alone in the street. The boulevard was littered with the dead and wounded mutants. Limbs, bodies, and pools of blood were scattered over the cobblestones. A few conscious mutants groaned or sobbed. To his right, a couple he had wed just after arriving were on their knees, hugging each other, wailing over the nearly unrecognizable corpse of their son. Wherever he looked, lifeless eyes stared back at him in the harsh glare of the searchlight. The SSA were picking their way through the mounds of bodies, kicking over corpses and peering at faces. Yakov heard the girl give a ragged gasp, and he looked down. Half her mother's face lay on the road, almost within reach. He bent and gathered the girl up in his left arm, and she buried her face in his robes, weeping uncontrollably. It was then he noticed the silver helmet of a sergeant as he clambered down from the turret of the armored car.
"You!"
bellowed Yakov, pointing with his free hand at the SSA man, his anger welling up inside him.
"Come here now!"
The officer gave a start and hurried over. His face was hidden by the visor of his helmet, but he seemed to be trembling.
"Take off your helmet!"
Yakov commanded, and he did so, letting it drop from quivering fingers. The man's eyes were wide with fear as he looked up at the tall preacher. Yakov felt himself getting even angrier as he grabbed the man by the throat, his long, strong fingers tightening on the sergeant's windpipe. The man gave a choked cough as Yakov used all of the leverage afforded by his height to push him down to his knees.
"You have fired on a member of the Ministerium, Sergeant," Yakov hissed.
The man began to stammer something, but a quick tightening of Yakov's grip silenced him. Releasing his hold, Yakov moved his hand to the top of the sergeant's head, forcing him to bow forward.
"Pray for forgiveness," whispered Yakov, his voice as sharp as a razor.
The other agents had stopped the search, and helmets bobbed left and right as they exchanged glances. He heard someone swearing from the crackling intercom inside the sergeant's helmet on the floor.
"Pray to the Emperor to forgive this most grievous of sins," Yakov repeated.
The sergeant started praying, his voice spilling almost incoherently from his lips, his tears splashing down his cheeks into the blood slicking the cobbles.
"Forgive me, Almighty Emperor, forgive me," pleaded the man,
looking up at Yakov as he released his hold, his cheeks streaked with tears, his face a mask of horror.
"1 hour's prayer every sunrise for the rest of your life," Yakov pronounced his judgment,
as he looked again at the bloodied remnants of the massacred mutants and felt Katiana's tears soaking through his tattered priestly robes. He added,
"And 1 day's physical penance a week for the next 5 years.
As he turned away from the horrific scene, Yakov heard the sergeant retching and vomiting. 5 years of self-flagellation would teach him not to fire on a preacher, Yakov thought grimly, as he stepped numbly through the blood and gore. Yakov was tired and even more irritable than normal when the sun rose the next day. He had taken Katiana back to her home, where her brother was in a fitful, nightmare-laden sleep, and then returned to the site of the cold-blooded execution to identify the dead. Some of the mutants he did not recognize from his congregation, and he assumed they were more of Lathesia's misguided freedom fighters. When he finally returned to the shantytown, the preacher saw several dozen SSA standing guard throughout the ghetto, each carrying a heavy pistol, and a charged shock more. As he dragged himself wearily up the steps to the chapel, a familiar face was waiting for him. Just outside the curtain portal stood Sparkek, the oldest mutant he knew and informal mayor cum judge of the ghetto. Yakov delved into his last reserves of energy as the old mutant met him halfway, his twisted, crippled body making hard work of the shallow steps.
"A grim night, preacher," said Sparkek in his broken, hoarse voice.
Yakov noticed the man's left arm was splintered and bound with bandages, and he held it across his chest as much as his deformed shoulder and elbow allowed.
"You were up there?"
Yakov asked, pointing limply at Sparkek's broken arm.
"This..."
Sparkek glanced down and then shook his head sadly.
"No, the SSA broke into my house just after, accused me of being the leader. I said they couldn't prove that, and they did this, saying they needed no proof."
"Your people need you now, before they..."
Yakov's voice trailed off, as his befuddled mind tried to tell him something.
"What did you say?"
"I said they couldn't prove anything," he started.
"That's it,"
snapped Yakov, startling the old mutant.
"What? Talk sense. You're tired,"
Sparkek snapped back, obviously annoyed at the preacher's outburst.
"Nothing for you to worry about."
Yakov tried to calm him with a waved hand.
"Now I'm about to ask you something, and whether you answer me or not, I need your promise that you will never tell another living soul what it is."
"Ma, you can trust me. Did I not help you when you first arrived? Did I not tell you about your congregation, their secrets and traits?"
Sparkek assured him.
"I need to speak to Lathisia, and quickly,"
Yakov said, bending close so that he could whisper.
"The rebel leader,"
Sparkek whispered back, clearly amazed. He thought for a moment before continuing.
"I cannot promise anything, but I may be able to send her word that you wish to see her."
"Do it, and do it quickly," insisted Yakov,
laying a gentle hand on the mutant's good arm.
"With all of these trigger-happy agents around, she's bound to do something reckless and get more of your people killed. If I can speak to her, I may be able to avoid more bloodshed."
"I will do as you ask, preacher,"
Sparkek nodded as he spoke, almost to himself. The dank sewers resounded with running water and constant dripping, punctured by the odd splash as Yakov placed a booted foot in a puddle or a rat scurried past through the rivulets seeping through the worn brick walls. Ahead, the glow lamp of Byzanthus bobbed and weaved in the mutant's raised hand as he led the way to Lathisia's hidden lair. Though one of the larger drainage systems, the tunnel was still cramped for the tall preacher, and his neck was sore from half an hour's constant stooping. His nose had become more accustomed to the noxious smell, which had assaulted his nostrils when the grey-skinned mutant had first opened the storm drain cover, and his eyes were now used to the dim blue glow of the lantern. He was thoroughly lost, he was sure of that, and he half suspected that was the point of the drawn-out journey. They must have been walking in circles, otherwise they would be beyond the boundaries of the mutant encampment, in the city proper or out in the fields. After several more minutes of back-breaking walking, Byzanthus finally stopped beside an access door in the sewer wall. He banged four times, paused, then banged twice more. Rusted locks squealed, and the door opened a moment later on shrieking hinges.
"You should loot some oil," Yakov couldn't stop himself from saying, earning himself a cheerless smile from Byzanthus, who waved him inside with the lantern.
There was no sign of the doorkeeper, but as Yakov preceded Byzanthus up the wooden steps just inside the door, he heard it noisily swinging shut again.
"Shy?"
Yakov asked, looking at Byzanthus over his shoulder as he climbed the stairwell.
"Suspicious of you,"
the mutant replied bluntly, giving him a hard stare. The steps led them into a small hallway, decorated with flaking murals on the walls. They were obviously inside one of the abandoned buildings of the royal district.
"Second door on the left,"
Byzanthus said curtly, indicating the room with a nod of his head as he extinguished the lamp. Yakov strode down the corridor quickly. his hard-soled boots clacking on the cracked tiles. Just as he reached the door, it opened to reveal Lithasia, dressed in ill-fitting SSA combat fatigues.
"Come in, make yourself at home," she said,
as she stepped back and took in the room with a wide sweep of her arm. The small chamber was bare except for a couple of straw pallets and a rickety table strewn with scatters of parchment and what looked like a schematic of the sewer system. The frescoes had been all but obliterated by crudely daubed black paint, which had puddled on the scuffed wooden floor. The remnants of a fire smouldered in one corner, the smoke drifting lazily out of a cracked window.
"We had to burn the carpet last winter," Lathasia said apologetically, noting the direction of his gaze.
"And the walls?"
Yakov asked, dropping his haversack onto the bare floor.
"Byzanthus, in a fit of pique, when he heard we'd been found guilty of treason," she explained hurriedly,
moving over to drop down on one of the mattresses.
"You share the same room?"
Yakov asked, recoiling from her in disgust.
"Out of wedlock."
"What of it?"
she replied, genuinely perplexed.
"Is there no sin you're not guilty of?"
he demanded hotly, regretting his decision to have anything to do with the wayward mutant. He fancied he could feel the fires of chaos burning his soul as he stood there. It would take many weeks of repentance to atone for even coming here.
"Better than freezing because we only have enough fuel to heat a few rooms," she told him plainly, before a smile broke over her pretty face. "You think that Byzanthus and I—" "Oh, Yakov, please, allow me some standards."
"I'm sure he doesn't see it that way,"
Yakov pointed out to her, with a meaningful look.
"I saw the way he looked at you in my bedchamber last night."
"Enough of this,"
Lathasia snapped back petulantly.
"I didn't ask you to come here to preach to me. You wanted to see me."
"Yes, you are right, I did,"
Yakov admitted, collecting his thoughts before continuing.
"Have you any other trouble planned for tonight?"
"What concern is that of yours, preacher?"
she asked, her black eyes narrowing with suspicion.
"You must not do anything. The SSA will retaliate with even more brutal force than last time," he warned her.
"Actually, we were thinking of killing some of them, strutting around with their bludgeons and pistols as if their laws apply here,"
she replied venomously, her cracked hands balling into fists. Yakov went over and sat down beside her, slowly, meeting her gaze firmly.
"Do you trust me?"
"No. Why should I?"
she asked, surprised.
"Why did you come to me before, to ask the Cardinal for help?"
he countered, leaning back on one hand but keeping his eyes on hers.
"Because it was... I was desperate. It was foolish of me. I shouldn't have,"
she mumbled back, turning her gaze away.
"You are nothing more than a child. Let me help you,"
Yakov persisted, feeling his soul starting to roast at the edges even as he said it.
"Stop it,"
she wailed suddenly, springing to her feet and backing away.
"If I don't do this, no one will help us."
"Have it your way,"
sighed Yakov, sitting upright again.
"There is more to this than the casual murder of Menavon's brother. I do not yet know what, but I need your help to find out."
"Why do you think so?"
she asked, her defiance forgotten as curiosity took over.
"You say his throat was slit?" Yakov asked, and she nodded. "Why? Any court on Karas Kaphalon would order a mutant hung on the word of a citizen, so why the murder? It must be because nobody could know who was involved or why he died. I think he saw something or someone and was murdered so he couldn't talk."
"But that means, if a master didn't do it..."
Lathasia started before her eyes widened in realization.
"One of us did this. No, I won't believe it."
"You might not have to,"
Yakov countered quickly, raising his hand to calm her.
"In fact, it's unlikely. The only way we can find out is to go to where Menavon's brother died and see what we can find."
"He worked in one of the cemeteries, not far from here, just outside the encampment boundary,"
she told the preacher.
"We'll take you there."
She half ran, half skipped, to the open door and called through excitingly.
"Byzanthus, Byzanthus, fetch Odric and Clayne. We're going on an expedition tonight."
The functional ferrocrete tombstones had little grandeur about them, merely a rectangular slabs plainly inscribed with the name of the family. The moon was riding high in the sky, as Yakov, Lethesia, and the other mutants searched the graveyard for any sign of what had happened. Yakov entered the small wooden shack that served as the gravedigger's shelter, finding various picks and shovels stacked neatly in one corner. There was an unmistakable red stain on the unfinished planks of the floor, which to Yakov's untrained eye seemed to have spread from near the doorway. He stood there for a moment, gazing out into the cemetery to see what was in view. It was Byzanthus who caught his attention with a waved arm, and they all gathered on him. He pointed to a grave, which was covered with a tarpaulin weighted with rocks. Lethesia gave Byzanthus a nod, and he pulled back the sheeting. The grave was deep and long, perhaps 3 meters from end to end and 2 meters down. Inside was a plain metal casket, wrapped in heavy chains, from which hung numerous padlocks.
"Why would anyone want to lock up a coffin?"
asked Lethesia, looking at Yakov. Yakov stood in one of the rooms just down the hall from where he had met Lethesia, gazing at the strange casket. The mutant leader was beside him, looking at it too, a small frown creasing her forehead.
"What do you..."
she started to ask before a loud boom reverberated across the building. Shouts and gunshots rang out along the corridor as 2 of them dashed from the room. Byzanthus came tearing into view from the doors at the far end, a smoking shotgun grasped in his clawed hands.
"The SSA!" he shouted to them as he ran up the corridor.
"How?"
Lethesia asked, but Yakov ignored her and ducked into the room to snatch up his satchel. More gunfire rattled from nearby, punctuated by a low bellowing of pain. As the preacher returned to the corridor, Byzanthus smashed him across the jaw with the butt of the shotgun, sending Yakov sprawling over the tiled floor.
"You betrayed us, Governor's lapdog,"
the mutant hissed, pushing the shotgun barrel into Yakov's chest.
"Emperor forgive you,"
spat the preacher, sweeping a booted foot into one of Byzanthus's knees, which cracked audibly as his legs folded under him. Yakov pounced forward and wrestled the shotgun from his grip, turning it on Lethesia as she stepped towards him.
"Believe me, this was not my doing,"
he told her, backing away.
"Save yourselves."
He took another step back and then threw the shotgun to Lethesia. Sweeping up his bag, Yakov shouldered his way through the doorway that led to the sewer stairs, and she was distracted. Yakov's heart was hammering as he pounded down the steps 3 at a time, almost losing his footing in his haste. At the bottom, someone stepped in front of him, and he lashed out with his fist, feeling it connect with a cheekbone. He spun the lock wheel on the door and splashed out into the sewers, cursing himself for ever getting involved in this mess. 200 years of penance wouldn't atone for what he had done. As the sounds of fighting grew closer, he hurried off through the drips and puddles with long strides. Yakov sat on his plain bed in a grim mood, brooding over the previous night's and day's events. He had spent the whole day a hostage to himself in the chapel, not daring to go out into the light, where some roving SSA man might recognize him from the raid on the rebels' hideout. He had prayed for hours on end, tears in his eyes as he asked the Emperor for guidance. He had allowed himself to get involved in something beyond him. He was a simple preacher. He had no right to interfere in such matters. As his guilt-racked day passed into evening, Yakov began to calm down. His dealings with the mutants may have been sinful, but he had discovered something strange. The chained coffin and the murder of the mutant, for what he knew about it, was at the heart of it. But what could he do? He had just decided to confess all to Prelate Kadaska, when footsteps out in the chapel attracted his attention. Stepping into the shrine, he saw a figure kneeling before the altar, head bowed. It was Lethesia, and as he approached, she looked up at him, her eyes red-rimmed from weeping.
"Byzanthus is dead, hung an hour ago," she said dully,
the black orbs of her eyes catching the light of the candle on the altar.
"He held off all of the agents to make sure I escaped. None of the others got out."
"I did not betray you," Yakov told her, kneeling beside her.
"I know,"
she said, turning to him and laying a hand on his knee.
"I want to find out what is in that coffin," Yakov said after a few moments of silence between them. "Will you help me?"
"I watched them. They didn't take it anywhere,"
she replied distractedly, wiping at a tear forming in her eye.
"Then "Will you go back there with me?" he asked,
standing up again and reaching a hand down to help her up.
"Yes, I will," she answered quietly. "I want to know why they died."
They took the overground route to the old aristocratic household, Lathesia leading him up her fire escape ladder onto a neighbouring rooftop. From there, they could see two SSA stationed at the front entrance and another at the tradesman's entrance at the rear. She showed him the rope line hung between the buildings, tied there for escape rather than entry, but suitable all the same. Yakov kept his gaze firmly on his hands as he pulled himself along the rope behind the live young rebel leader, trying not to think of the 10-metre drop to the hard road beneath him. As she helped him onto the rooftop of her one-time lair, a gentle cough from the darkness made them freeze. Out of the shadows strolled a man swathed in a heavy coat, his breath carving mist into the chill evening air.
"A strange pastime for a preacher," he said as he stepped towards them,
hands in the pockets of his trench coat.
"Who are you?"
demanded Lathesia, her hand straying to the revolver wedged into the waistband of her trousers at the small of her back.
"Please don't try and shoot me," he replied calmly. "You'll attract some unwanted attention." "Who are you?"
Yakov repeated the question, stepping between the stranger and Lathesia.
"An investigator for the Inquisition,"
he told them, stopping a couple of paces away.
"An inquisitor?"
Lathesia hissed, panic in her eyes.
"Don't worry. Your little rebellion doesn't concern me tonight," he assured her,
pulling his hands free from the coat and crossing his arms.
"Then I didn't say I was an inquisitor. You are after the casket as well,"
Yakov guessed, and the man nodded slightly.
"Shall we go and find it, then?"
the investigator invited them, turning and walking away. The scene before Yakov could have been taken straight from a drawing in the Liber Heresius. 12 robed and masked figures knelt in a circle around the coffin, 5 braziers set at the points of a star drawn around the casket. The air was filled with acrid smoke and the sonorous chanting of the cultists filled the room. One of them stood and pulled back his hood, and Yakov almost gasped out loud when he recognized the face of the governor. Holding his arms wide, he chanted louder, the words a meaningless jumble of syllables to the preacher.
"I think we've seen enough,"
the investigator said, crouching beside Yakov and Lathesia on the patio outside the room. He drew 2 long las pistols from holsters inside his coat and offered one to Yakov. Yakov shook his head.
"Surely you're not opposed to righteous violence, preacher,"
the stranger said with a raised eyebrow.
"No,"
Yakov replied, pulling his rucksack off. The preacher delved inside and a moment later pulled out a black enameled pistol. With a deftness that betrayed years of practice, he slipped home the magazine and cocked the gun.
"I just prefer to use my own weapon,"
Lathesia gasped in astonishment.
"What?"
asked Yakov, annoyed.
"You think they call us defenders of the faith just because it sounds good? Shoot to kill,"
rasped the stranger as he stood up. He fired both pistols, shattering the windows and spraying glass shards into the room. A couple of the cultists pulled wicked-looking knives from their robe belts and leapt at him. The governor dived behind the casket, shrieking madly. Yakov's first shot took a charging cultist in the chest, punching him off his feet. His second blew the kneecap off another, his third taking him in the forehead as he collapsed. The investigator's las pistol spat bolts of light into the cultists fleeing for the door, while the boom of Lathesia's heavy pistol echoed off the walls. As Yakov stepped into the room, one of the cultists pushed over a brazier and jumped to his right to avoid the flaming coals. A las bolt took the traitor in the eye, vaporizing half his face. In a few moments the one-sided fight was over. All the cultists were dead, their blood soaking into the bare boards. Suddenly the governor burst from his hiding place and bolted for the door, but Lathesia was quicker, tackling him to the ground. He flashed for a moment before she smashed him across the temple with the grip of her revolver. She was about to pistol-whip him again, but the stranger grabbed her wrist in mid-swing.
"My masters would prefer he survived for interrogation," he told the girl,
letting go of her arm and stepping back. Lathesia hesitated for a moment before standing. she delivered a sharp kick to the governor's midriff before stalking away, emptying spent casings from her gun.
"I have no idea what is going on here," Yakov confessed, sliding the safety into place on his own pistol. "No reason you should," the man assured him. "I suppose I do owe you an explanation, though."
Slipping his las pistols back into his coat, the man leant back on the wall.
"The plague has been engineered by the governor and his allies," the navigator told him. "He wanted the mutants to rebel, to try to overthrow him. While Karas Kaphalon remains relatively peaceful, the Imperial authorities and the Inquisition are content to ignore the more or less tolerant attitude to mutants found here. But should they threaten the stability of this world, they would be swift and ruthless in their response."
The man glanced over his shoulder at Lathasia, who was studying the casket intently, then looked Yakov squarely in the eye before continuing quietly.
"But that's not the whole of it. So the mutants are wiped out. That's really no concern of the Inquisition. But the governor's motives are what concern us. I, that is we, believe that he has made some kind of pact with a dark force, some kind of unholy elevation. His side of the deal was the delivery of a massive sacrifice, a whole population, genocide of the mutants. But he couldn't just have them culled. The entire economy of Karas Kaphalon is based on mutant labor, and no one would allow such a direct action to threaten their prosperity. So he imported a virus which feeds on mutants. It's called the Aether Mortandus, and costs a lot of money to acquire from the Mechanicus.
"And the coffin?" Yakov asked. "Where does that fit in?"
"It doesn't, not at all."
The stranger laughed bitterly.
"I was hiding in it when the gravedigger saw me. I killed him. But unfortunately, before I had time to finish the burial, his cries brought an SSA patrol and I had to leave. It's just coincidence."
"So what's so important about it, then?"
Yakov eyed the casket with suspicion. Lathasia was toying with one of the locks, a thoughtful look on her face.
"I wouldn't open that if I were you,"
the stranger spoke up, startling the girl, who dropped the padlock and stepped back. The investigator put an arm around Yakov's shoulders and pulled him close, his voice dropping to a conspiratorial whisper.
"The reason the governor has acted now is because of a convergence of energies on Karas Kaphalon,"
the man told Yakov slowly.
"Mystical forces, astrological conjunctions are forming, with Karas Kaphalon at its center. For 5 years, the barrier between our world and the hell of chaos will grow thinner and thinner. Entities will be able to break through. Aliens will be drawn here. The death and disaster will plague this world on an unparalleled scale. It will be hell incarnate. If you wish for your help today, I can arrange a transfer to a parish on another world. Get you away from here."
Yakov looked at the man for a minute, searching his own soul.
"If what you say is true," he said eventually, "then I respectfully decline the offer. It seems men of faith will be a commodity in much need over the coming years."
He looked up at Lathasia, who was looking at them from across the room.
"And," Yakov finished, "my parishioners will need me more than ever."
Well, as many of you know, I'm not a massive fan of Gav Forbes' work. Some of his stuff I'm not a fan of at all. But when he does good, I've got to hand it to him. This was a very imaginative and nice story. Something different for 40K. This is up there for me with some of his best work, you know. Like I say, the Lorgar Primarch novel is one of the best books I think he's ever written. And Last Chances as well. Really, really like that. So, yeah, thanks very much for watching. Thank you to all the people who've been supporting the channel recently. If you would like to join this company of heroes, you can see here, these names of honour, then please consider supporting me on Patreon, on Subscribestar, and by becoming, becoming a YouTube member by following the link below, the join button down below there. The other links are in the description. And yeah, there's other things you can do in the description to assist me taking out an Audible subscription, all that sort of stuff. I'm not going to shill as much. It's just I need to at the second. Sorry. So if anyone can assist, please. Thank you. But to everybody who has and everybody who sent me private messages, thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it. It's great. And yeah, I appreciate it. It's a difficult time for everybody. I know. I'll be back again for more stuff very, very soon. This one really tickled me. So don't turn off straight away and you'll get a little taste of how much it tickled me. Sorry if I lost it a little bit in the middle. I was going to cut it out, but I thought, you know, why not enjoy the fun. I'll see you later. Have a good one. Bye-bye. Cheers. Pulling on his vestments, he rounded on the mutant girl.
You put him up to this, he demanded.
Menevan has been an associate of mine for quite some time.
I thought I'd include this so you understand how entertained I was during this. It's too funny, boys and ladies. It was too funny, but yeah. I don't know why, this fucking story, it just tickled me that bad. Yeah, yeah, definitely over now. Bye-bye.